Horsemen of the Sky, a short radio play produced by TuneIn FM Community Radio in Nimbin, Australia.
Hey, listen, mate. Maybe this isn't such a good idea. I haven't got much of a head for heights.
Don't worry, Ozzy. You won't feel a thing. Just lean out and let go.
I looked down from the hovering helicopter at the small figures of the troops on the ground. It was a mistake.
Sweet Jesus, I'm not going down there. I've changed my mind.
You'll be fine. Let you set up. See this belt here with the two steel D-rings sewn into the back? I'm going to buckle it around your waist, right? Now I take one of the ropes and make a turn through one D-ring and then snap it onto this point above the doorway. Now the same thing with the other rope. Okay, it's time to fly.
The ropes fell all the way to the ground, where a bare-chested American soldier held the ends. Around him, his buddies who had already made the descent raised their faces expectantly to watch my effort. The crew chief slapped a pair of heavy gloves into my hands.
Put these on when you want to stop. Tighten your grip on the rope and don't sweat it if they get hot. The guy on the ground will stop you by spreading the ends. You feel all right? You look a bit green.
By now, I was seriously regretting my earlier decision to try this rappelling business, which was used in Vietnam to insert troops in a terrain where a chopper couldn't land. I found the troops practicing the technique on a visit to a helicopter company of the famous Screaming Eagles, the 101st Airborne Division in the far north of the country. The flyers soon learnt that I was an Australian, and they told me that Australians had invented the headfirst version of the technique. Then they dared me to have a go. It all looked so simple from the ground.
Okay, out you go.
Look, mate, I'm a photographer, not a bloody trapeze artist. How about I just skip this round?
Chickening out is not an option for the Screaming Eagles. You get out there now. Not scared, are you?
Scared? Of course I was scared, but I abandoned any further protest. I set my jaw and planted my feet firmly on the steel floor, grasped a rope in each gloved hand, and leaned forward as I'd seen the others do. They'd all piled out without hesitation, plummeting headfirst within a few feet of the ground, then gripped, flipped, and landed lightly on their feet. I gulped in some air, closed my eyes, and released my grip on the ropes.
Shit!
I opened my eyes to find my hands clenched. I'd only slid a couple of feet.
Let the fuck go!
Ignoring my sense of better judgment, I let go of the ropes and tipped forward. Immediately, my stomach heaved and vertigo overwhelmed me. I clutched convulsively and hung, my body projecting horizontally from the doorway while my boots scrambled vainly for a foothold. The men below doubled over, helpless with laughter. Some shouted encouragement. I groaned and shut my eyes, unable to get back and unwilling to go down.
Get the hell out of my helicopter!
Get a dead dog up here!
Move your goddamn arsy ass!
Oh, fuck it!
With a silent prayer, I opened my fists and surrendered myself to my fate. The ground rushed up, turning everything to a blur, until I felt a jerk on the ropes and found myself looking into the stubbled face of a soldier with a huge smile. The grunt released the ropes, sending me tumbling into the dirt.
Hot damn, you did it! Funniest thing I've seen all year!
Yeah, do I get extra points for style?
You bet. Y'all just invented a new move. What's your name, anyway?
Harry.
Then Harry's hanger it is. You were horizontal up there, man.
I dusted off my greens and decided it was time to introduce myself to the company commanding officer, who turned out to be a thin, sandy-haired Texan with a quiet manner that inspired confidence and immediately put me at ease.
Good to meet you, Harry. I'm Colonel Crockett. I hear you put on quite a show for my boys.
Yeah, word spreads pretty fast around here.
Well, especially when the news concerns a press man. I'm sorry I missed it. You're the first correspondent to try that, you know. Have you done any army training?
Only the school cadets. We didn't have any helicopters.
Now, we couldn't find this war without choppers and the pilots to fly them.
Crockett looked smartly military with his colonel pips and campaign ribbons. But I detected a war weariness in the man and thought he would probably be happier in jeans and a flannel shirt. Some officers feel the burden of command. The best of them have the courage to care and bear the consequences of caring. Crockett was one of them.
About tomorrow's mission, on the understanding that this information is embargoed, you will have heard of the Ashau Valley, huh? and the caisson and all that. Now, boys, it's always been bandit territory. The Ho Chi Minh Trail runs just to the west, and from there the North Vietnamese can move in and out of the Ashau at will. Now, tomorrow we are going after Uncle Ho's trail on the Laotian side. Ammonia sensors, can you believe that? We dropped in the area indicate that recent traffic. Now, Charlie hasn't worked out a way to disguise the smell of his piss yet, but he probably will.
Then he's not to be underestimated.
Only a fool would. The North Vietnamese are resourceful soldiers, and they've kept that trail open and operating for years, despite our best efforts to destroy it. They walk or bicycle all the way from the north to the delta, and when we bomb the shit out of them, they rebuild and keep right on coming. They fight pretty hard.
Yeah, well, perhaps it's a territorial thing. Animals are at their fiercest on their own ground. These troops from the north are in it for as long as it takes. I mean, that must make a difference.
You mean, of course, they're not only American troops fighting on the enemy's turf. They only stay 12 months, and then they fly back to the comforts of home. That's still a big commitment, though. Believe me, Harry, it takes a lot of guts to fly a helicopter in this war, even for a week.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Colonel. I recognize that after my first ride. You guys are amazing. Ice cool and just that little bit crazy, if you know what I mean.
Well, I know what you mean, but come on, it's chow time, son. Let's amble down to the mess where you can meet some of them crazy horsemen of the sky.
Shit, this place is huge.
I remembered other messes in other bases. Dark and maudlin places patronised by officers intent on finding relief from disillusionment at the bottom of a whiskey glass. This mess was as big as a basketball court and packed with young officers. They immediately noticed the presence of their commander.
Evening, sir. Hi, Colonel. Evening, boys. Come on, Harry. I'm going to park you with someone while I do my rounds. Now, there he is. This young fellow with the film star looks my nephew, Rory. My sister's son, and he'll be flying a Loach, and that's a spotter chopper, with us tomorrow. Now, Rory, meet this Australian photographer, Harry Cannon, the flying kangaroo. Now, I'll see you both in the morning.
He's quite a guy, your uncle.
Well, we think so. I heard about your classic exit today. Have a cigar. Now, so what prompted you to forsake the flesh pots of Saigon and come all the way up here to visit us?
I was in the area. Saigon's too cynical for me. I don't like to spend too much time there, and being a freelancer means I can come and go as I please, and if I don't come back with a picture, well, there's no one to complain. But how about you? Loach. Stands for Light Observation Chopper, doesn't it?
Sure enough. You'd think they could have called it something sexier.
Hey, Loach works for me. It's cute. But there can't be anything cute about flying. Hey, I hear they don't even have any guns. That can't be true, can it?
It's true, Bubba.
Struth. What's it feel like to fly around unarmed?
You get used to it. You know, you get into a mindset after a while, like a hunting dog flushes ducks for the shooters.
So do you think about the possibilities, you know, the dangers?
Well, the way I look at it is this. Now, it's like flipping a coin. The chances are always 50-50, no matter what the previous results. I've been here 10 months this tour and not a scratch. Nevertheless, I know that every day is a new toss of the coin.
So, can you tell me how you feel about risking your life for the South Vietnamese? I'm sorry if that sounds intrusive.
It's okay. It's a fair question and easy to answer, because I'm not fighting for the Vietnamese. I'm here to fight for my country, the United States of America. You look puzzled. Well, never mind. Hey, are you ready to try our chow?
We joined the line of officers, holding out their trays to glistening cooks who spooned on steaks and fried chicken, mashed potato and buttered corn. Salads with three choices of dressing were on offer, a mound of rolls and bread, and finally, apple or blueberry pie with as much ice cream as the remaining space on my tray permitted.
Jeez, you Yanks sure know how to eat well. I was up this way not long ago with an infantry unit out in search and destroy. When we camped out for the night, no one started cooking. Then a Chinook appeared overhead and started lowering down pots of spaghetti and meatballs, followed by ice cream in cold packs. Jesus, for a moment there, I thought the officer was going to invite Charlie over for dinner. So, what'll you do when you leave here? Do you ever think about doing something else, you know, outside the army, I mean?
Sure I do. You know, my old papa is a boat builder in Galveston. Just a small affair, and he's been nagging me to become his partner and build boats. I decided that I will, just as soon as I finish this second tour. You know, a whole lot of my wife, my kids, I'll see them, and here's a picture of them. The twins are three, and that beautiful blonde is my wife, Janice.
I was in a reflective mood as I strolled back to the press hut. When I was a boy, my happiest times were swapping comic books with schoolmates and then running to the bedroom to sort out all the Tarzan and the Phantom from the pile to read first. My search for heroes encompassed Biggles and the fighter pilots and football stars of Champion Annual. War, I learnt, was heroic. Heroes always won through. I was still searching for my heroes. Something in Rory reminded me of those Battle of Britain pilots who made light of their perils. I imagine that they too had calm, intelligent eyes, were prepared to treat each day as a spinning coin. The helicopter crews assigned to the day's mission gathered early next morning with the low sun already promising another scorching day. I saw Rory at the controls of the Loach and watched as he swapped his Confederate army cap with the crossed swords for a flying helmet. I strolled over.
G'day. Hey, at least you're prepared to wear a hard hat.
Well, the odds are short enough. Will I be seeing you in the mess tonight?
You bet. I scrambled aboard the Colonel's Command Huey, and Colonel Crockett led his pack into a cloudless sky and turned west towards the remote and sparsely populated highlands of the Arshau Valley. With a slightly pointed nose like a dolphin's face, the Huey housed two armor-plated pilot seats with a flat steel floor between them. Door gunners crouched over their M60 machine guns in recesses on both sides. The highlands ended abruptly in an escarpment that fell steeply into the broad expanse of the Arshau. Smoothly, almost lazily, the pack sorted itself into combat formation with the colonel staying high. Below him ranged black Cobra gunships bristling with rockets and cannons. Below them, Rory angling his observation chopper towards the far mountains where intelligence analysts suspected a troop build-up, perhaps a field hospital, underground or under nets, or a major staging point on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Not far away lay the remains of the US Marine Firebase at Kaisan, long since abandoned. Rory's Loach began a systematic low-level patrol above the treetops. The unarmed aircraft was little more than a clear plastic bubble and looked to me as tiny and vulnerable as a dragonfly when it stopped to hover close to the forest canopy. Nothing stirred beneath the trees, nothing looked out of place. Just then, I noticed a cross scratched into the Huey's windscreen near the colonel's eye level, and I remembered seeing two rocket launchers welded where none should have been to the chopper's landing frame. Well, he was a Texan after all. Time passed, and then Rory spotted something. He marked the spot with yellow and purple smoke and then darted aside as the Cobras launched their attack. The gunship swooped on the smoke and blasted the trees to matchwood, but there was no sign of an enemy visible through the holes in the canopy and no answering fire. The Loach buzzed the sight for a closer look. Nothing. Just a sense of anticlimax. The flight reformed and continued its patient patrol. Time dragged on. Suddenly, without any preamble, a brilliant light flashed above the trees, followed by the crump of an exploding rocket.
My God, Deloach, look at that fireball. It must have been a rocket from the ground. Oh God, look, the tanks have gone up. Christ, you'll be incinerated.
I turned to see the colonel, his jaw clenched and his knuckles white on the controls, thrust his bird into a vertical dive. With the wind whipping us, Crockett sighted coldly through the windscreen cross as he hurled his helicopter at the forest, and only at the last second did he release both rockets. They snaked into the trees and exploded. Close on the leader's trail, the Cobras delivered their rockets next to his. The forest flew apart. Crockett hauled the Huey into a steep climb, flipped it over, and returned to the assault, this time with cannons blazing. Only when the forest was afire, the target obscured by smoke, and all the aircraft had exhausted their ammunition, did the pack pull back and turn for home. The radio didn't crackle on the return trip. Nobody spoke. I retreated into denial, shocked and unwilling to accept the evidence of my eyes, to accept what it meant. A numbness settled on me. The colonel put his Huey down on the home pad and switched off the engines. Pulled off his helmet, his face chiseled from stone, and looked back at me.
You saw the explosion?
Yeah, I saw it.
That was Rory, my nephew. Damn this war to hell.
The old warrior, the leader with the courage to care, turned away and raised his anguished face to the sky.
Horsemen of the Sky was produced by Toon FM Community Radio in Nimbin, Australia. It was written by Don Sharp and recorded by Mario Santini. Bob Tisso appeared as Harry Cannon and the narrator. Daddy Cool played all the Americans except for the crew chief, who was played by Martin Preedy. Edited by Don Sharp.